Oh, and I forgot to say one other thing. Chag Sameach. Happy holiday is what that roughly means. This is Chag Sukkot, the festival of Sukkot. It is also known as the festival of, in Scripture, it's called at one point the festival of ingathering. In today's Torah portion that Shimon highlighted for us, it had the idea of the festival at the turn of the year. It's interesting that even though Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year now, was more than 2 weeks ago, according to Scripture, we're still celebrating the turn of the year. As it said in Exodus chapter 34, verse 22, they're right at toward the end of the portion that Shimon highlighted for us. So we're still observing, we're still celebrating. In fact, joy is the keynote theme for Sukkot, this holiday that we're in right now that began last Wednesday night and runs most of the way through next week. Joy. I love pointing this out, that of all the holidays, joy is the keynote theme that shows up in this particular one. Oh, I think Hanukkah is a blast. Purim is outrageous. But there is a special joy, a special gladness that comes with Sukkot. It's the last of the series of holidays that began back in the spring with Passover. And so it's like the capstone. We've reached the summit of the year of holidays. The year, even though they only last about 6 months, the cycle. And then we have a long drought through the winter until we get to Passover again next spring. Joy is our theme, so much so that in Jewish tradition, one of the names of the holidays is Zeman Simchatenu, the time of our rejoicing, the time of our joy. And in fact, it says in the Mishnah that if you have not been to Jerusalem during Sukkot, if you have not seen that 80-foot candelabra, that 80-foot burning torch that they erected in the temple courts that we're told shine the light into every yard, every courtyard of every house in Jerusalem. If you had not seen that, if you had not seen the water drawing ceremony that happened during Sukkot, you had never seen real joy. I can think of all kinds of joyful things. I was just talking to someone yesterday that is getting ready for the birth of his granddaughter and was getting ready to drive to Philadelphia to be there. I said, Mazel Tov, what a wonderful blessing and joy. But nothing, according to Scripture, matches the joy of Sukkot. What a wonderful thing, this time that we've come to. There is so many themes in this holiday. It's known by several different names because each one of them points to a different idea. We have a sukkah in the back that is a theme of Sukkot. We take the four species, that kind of funny shaped giant mutant lemon. In Hebrew, it's called an etrog. We take that together with palm branches and myrtle branches and willow branches, and we wave them before the Lord. Why? In Leviticus chapter 30, Leviticus chapter 23, we're told to take these things and we will rejoice. There's that word again. We will rejoice before the Lord for an entire week. So that's something else that we will do tomorrow for our Sukkot party. One of the traditions that I want to highlight is a special ceremony that happened while the Second Temple was standing. It was something that would happen each of the latter days of Sukkot after the first couple days. It was called the water drawing ceremony. And if you can remember, if you've ever seen a map or if you've been to Jerusalem, you've seen how the Temple Mount, well, it's up on a hill, so we call it the Temple Mount. It's up above the city, at least where the ancient city of Jerusalem would be, which isn't necessarily where the old city walls are now. The ancient city of Jerusalem was actually on a little hill coming down from the Temple Mount. It was actually much, much smaller than even what we call the old city of Jerusalem is now. And so you would go from Jerusalem, you would go up the hill to the temple. We talk about making aliyah. When someone comes to do a Torah blessing, we say they're doing an aliyah. They're going up. In our case, in this building, they're coming down. But they're still going up to the instruction of God. And so in Jerusalem, the temple was up on the hill over the ancient city. And the priests would take a couple trumpets, and there would be others that would have flutes and other instruments, and they would begin a processional out of the temple down the hill into the city of Jerusalem to the Pool of Siloam. It was where Hezekiah's tunnel emptied into the city of Jerusalem. At one point, many generations earlier, there was a siege of Jerusalem, and they literally cut a tunnel. How they did it without bulldozers and dynamite, I don't know. They cut a tunnel through the rock out to the Gihon Spring, which was actually outside the city walls, so that they could bring water into the city. And it emptied into the Pool of Siloam. And during the Second Temple period, this is where the priest, carrying a water flask, a pitcher, would come down to this pool with this big throng of people with trumpets and flutes and music. We're even told what they sang. Did you know we sang it this morning? I didn't mean to sing a solo. I don't know if they sang the hey part back then, but that's an ancient song. By the way, that song is an entire, except for the hey part, is an entire quote from the book of Isaiah, chapter 12, verse 3. And we're told that they would sing that song as they made their way back up the hill, aliyah, back up to the temple. The priests carrying that pitcher filled with water, again, to flutes and trumpets and a huge processional. And they would enter back through the water gate, appropriately named for that very reason. It was named the water gate because the water drawing ceremony would enter through this gate. They would carry it through the courtyards of the temple to the altar, And there they would dump that pitcher of water out at the base of the altar amid rejoicing and shouting. It applied to a number of different things. It applied to a cry for rain. You see, in Israel through the summer, it's bone dry. I've been to Israel in May, in late spring, and even at that time of year, they get just a tiny bit of rain. And then the summer is dry. Sukkot comes at the end of the harvest, and there is the new cries to God to sustain the land, to send the rain. We see this in Zechariah chapter 14, the connection between cries, prayers for rain, and the holiday of Sukkot. And so that's one thing that this water drawing ceremony pictured. But it also symbolized something else. That context of Isaiah chapter 12 has to do with Messiah, the coming of Messiah. The expectation of not just physical rain, but if you will, a spiritual regeneration that will carry from this period of holidays. As I said, we're at the summit of all the Jewish holidays now, the capstone, the big kablooey at the end. But a spiritual restoration that will then blow through the long winter. God, send us Messiah. So there was a tradition in Jewish literature that Messiah would come at the time of Sukkot. There was an expectation that at Sukkot, Messiah would come walking in to Jerusalem. Interestingly, it is thought by some, actually including myself, that Messiah, Yeshua, was born during the holiday of Sukkot. That's a different discussion. Although, just that Messiah Conference last year or the year before, there was a rather detailed presentation given by someone arguing that Messiah was born on the 1st of Nisan in the spring, just ahead of the Passover. Interesting thought. But with Sukkot, there was an expectation that Messiah would come on the scene. And so, this is the background of John chapter 7. I said all that to go to John chapter 7. Yeshua has arrived in Jerusalem. There are those that are not so thrilled that he would be there. In fact, he has told his brothers that he's staying away. He's going, no. They say, come, go with us to Jerusalem for Sukkot. And he's going, no. You go on. You go do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. But then after they leave, he then goes alone, secretly. He understands that his time to be arrested, his time to be executed, is not at hand. The time for his death has not arrived. So he goes to Jerusalem to celebrate Sukkot clandestinely. After all, he's a good Jewish guy, according to this Torah portion that Sarah just read for us. Every able-bodied person was to go to Jerusalem for Sukkot. And so this is what Yeshua does. But throughout the entire holiday, maybe he gets there halfway through the week. Nobody notices him. He just kind of blends in. It's not like he's an extraordinary-looking guy. He's not even described as particularly handsome or especially tall. He just blended into the crowd that was there in Jerusalem that day. until the last day of Sukkot. Perhaps the day called Hoshana Rabbah. And we pick up in John chapter 7, verse 37. On the last and greatest day of the feast, by the way, in Jewish tradition, Sukkot was so popular that they would just call it the feast. And if you said the feast, you'd know that they weren't talking about Passover. They weren't talking about Shavuot. They were talking about Sukkot. After all, Sukkot is, by the way, the most mentioned Jewish holiday in the scripture. It shows up more than Passover does. Believe it or not, it even shows up discussed more often than Sabbath. So John picks up. John is a nice Jewish guy writing for a Jewish audience. And so he doesn't have to explain what holiday we're talking about. It just says on the last and greatest day of the feast, Sukkot, of course, Yeshua stood up. Now he's not trying to hide anymore. He stood up and he cried out loudly, "If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scriptures say, out of the innermost being will flow rivers of living water." He stands up and he says, if anyone is thirsty, we've heard this before in John. We heard it in chapter 6, which was a story about Passover. In John chapter 4, he told a Samaritan woman sitting at Shechem at Jacob's well, he gave her the same thing. I am the living water. I am the water of life. I am the river of the water of life. If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me, and out of the inmost being will flow rivers of living water. Yeshua, there in the temple courts, perhaps as the moment that procession had just arrived back from the Pool of Siloam, carrying that big flask of water, and as it was poured out on the altar with great shouts of Hoshana, Hoshana, Lord, save us. Quoting Psalm 118, a cry that was lifted up to the Most High on this holiday. There, at that moment, as that water is being poured out, this theme of water, this theme of refreshing, this theme of rain, this theme of could it also mean that Messiah might come? Not only physical restoration from God's physical reign, but could it be that Messiah also? And amid these expectations and hopes and dreams, Yeshua stood up and said, if you're looking for water, you don't have to look anymore. He stands up in a loud voice. Earlier, he was trying to hide himself there in the temple during Sukkot. On the last day, he's hiding no more. He says, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. Whoever trusts in me, as Scripture says, out of his innermost being will flow rivers of living water, Mayim Chayim. He said this about the Spirit with whom those who trusted in him were going to receive, for the Spirit was not yet given, since Yeshua was not yet glorified. What what verse is he quoting here? He says, as Scripture says, out of his innermost being will flow rivers of living water. There are a number of scriptures in the Tanakh, the Hebrew scriptures, that talk about the promise of water. Isaiah talks about, if you're thirsty, come. In Isaiah chapter 44, there is the promise of nourishment. There is the promise of sustenance. In Joel chapter 3, verse 18, there is the promise of water being poured out of the temple in Jerusalem. There are a number of scriptures that talk about these things. There's no scripture that it says exactly what Yeshua just quoted, though. But let me take you to two. I want to start in Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14. This is the passage that talks about all the nations coming to Sukkot during the reign of God, when God sets up his kingdom after that Gog and Magog thing that Shimon described, which is today's Haftorah reading. After that happens, we're told that all the nations will come to Jerusalem to observe Sukkot. If they don't, they won't get rain. By the way, the nations today are not required to observe Jewish holidays. However, they will be in the future. As I like to say, why not start now? Why not start now? Why wait to observe Sukkot? So again, I think it's cool that we have some Christians coming to join us for our observance tomorrow. Earlier in that same chapter, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 9 is a familiar verse. Verse 9 says, V'haya Adonai lamelech va'al kol ha'aretz b'yom ha'hu yiye Adonai echad u'shemo echad. This, we sing this at the end of the Aleinu in our service. Do you recognize that? Now I can't sing it. The Haya Adonai Lamelech. Okay, I'm still not singing it right. Take that off the tape. The CD, the MP3. In that day, the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be one in his name one. But look at the verse just before that. Verse 8. In that day, living water will flow from Jerusalem. Mayim Chayim will flow from Jerusalem. Part of it to the eastern sea and part to the western sea. Throughout the summer and the winter. Mayim Chayim will flow out of Jerusalem. Jerusalem's up in the mountains. There's no... Many cities in our world are built on rivers. Jerusalem is not one of them. There is no river flowing past Jerusalem. But Zechariah envisions a time when living water, Mayim Chayim, will come from Jerusalem and will pour down to, in one hand, to the Mediterranean Sea, to the other hand, down to the Dead Sea. There will be water flowing from Jerusalem. One other passage that I want to take you to before we tie this together is in Ezekiel chapter 47. Ezekiel chapter 47. This is another place where the prophets talk about living water coming from Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the world's source for living water. It says, he led me back to the entrance of the temple. Again, here we are. We situated ourselves in the temple in Jerusalem. And Ezekiel continues, I found that water was issuing from below the platform of the temple eastward, since the temple faced east. But the water was running out at the south of the altar, under the south wall of the temple. Then he led me out by the way of the north gate and led me around to the outside of the outer gate that faces the east. And I found that water was gushing from under the south wall. I was struck this week as I was looking at this, the descriptions of this water flowing out. In verse 1, it first says that it was issuing out from below the platform. Then later in verse 1, it says that it was running out along the side of the altar. And then in verse 3, it says that it was gushing out. I just thought of it just reminded me of a flood. May the Most High give support and strength to those that have lost their lives and their livelihood in Colorado this week. When a flood, I think of a flow of water, a flood starts big, and then the farther you get away from it, the less and less water you have. It begins to divide into different channels. Perhaps some of it is absorbed into the ground. It may start gushing, but the farther you get away from the source, it diminishes. You have a smaller flow the farther away you get from the water source. But in Ezekiel, it struck me the prophet is envisioning the complete opposite. Out of this water starts flowing out from the temple, but instead of getting diminishing, it actually increases. It goes from just trickling out of the temple to running alongside the altar to gushing out of the wall. Where did it come from? Where did the water come from that was gushing out of the wall if there was only a trickle coming out of the temple? Actually, if you keep reading the next several verses, you'll see that the same holds true. Ezekiel walks 1,000 yards, and there the stream is ankle deep. And then he walks 1,000 yards, and the stream is knee deep. I still go, where'd the water come from? I mean, if it was only an ankle, if there's no other rivers in Jerusalem, there's no other water source. It's all coming from the temple. But if it was ankle deep, and then you go a little further and it's knee deep, where do they come from? He keeps stepping, actually, 1,000 yards, and it says that it's so deep, it can only be crossed by swimming. You can only swim across it, it's so much water. Oh, Yeshua says, if you trust in me, it will produce rivers of water of life. It'll gush. It'll pour out. To me, these are awesome images because they just raise all kinds of amazing ideas in my head. Where did that water come from? Well, let's find out. In the book of John, there is a consistent and regular focus on water. It's mentioned in John chapter 2. Yeshua turns water to wine. In Yochanan chapter 3, he talks about the you must be born not only of water, but also spirit. There's that link between water and spirit. In chapter 4, Yeshua offers living water to that woman who he is addressing. In chapter 6 of John, Yeshua says, come to me if you're thirsty and you'll thirst no more. Here in chapter 7, Yeshua says, if you're thirsty, come to me and you will have rivers of living water. It's interesting that it's only John that describes that at Yeshua's death, when the soldier pierced Yeshua's side, that blood and water comes out. The other Gospels mention that a soldier pierces Yeshua's body. Yeshua is already dead. But only John tells us that water comes out of Yeshua. Again, where did that come from? From Yeshua comes water. Out of Messiah comes rivers of living water. He says, if you trust in me, that will cause us to spring, not even a geyser, it'll spring a flood. And you won't even know where it's coming from. It might be a trickle, but it's going to grow into a stream. It's going to grow into something that you can't even swim across. This image of the life that is available in Messiah Yeshua. The rivers of the water of life come from Yeshua. Where did that gushing come from in Zechariah chapter 14, or that mighty stream in Ezekiel 7? It is Messiah that produces the rivers of the water of life within us. In closing, I want to read an amazing passage that ties this all together. Again, it's in the writings of Yochanan. It's in Revelation chapter 22. It's the last chapter of the Bible. Revelation 22 says, then an angel showed me the river of the water of life. Now, where have we heard that before? An angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and from the Lamb, down the middle of the city street. On either side of the river was the tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month, and its leaves were for the healing of the nations. The tree of life is supported by the river of the water of life. Revelation 22 tells us where that mighty stream comes from that starts so small and gets so big. It's so much different than we would think of a stream of water. But in God's economy, He takes this much and He does immensely more than we could ask or think. Even imagine. Messiah Yeshua is the source of that water, flowing from Himself, flowing from the throne of God. I encourage you to step up, take hold of that life, that love, that purpose that comes with Messiah. if you keep reading in John chapter 7, you'll find that there was a rather contentious debate that happened when Yeshua said that. They understood his words. There was immediately a debate about, well, he's the prophet. And others said, no, he's Messiah. And then the temple elite, the aristocracy, the priest and the Pharisees said, wow, no, he can't be. After all, no prophet comes from Galilee. This guy came from Nazareth, and we know that no prophet ever came from Galilee. Yeshua's words sparked debate. They were angry, and by the way, they were also wrong. Case in point, Jonah came from Galilee. Don't let the life of Yeshua cause you to be lost in the debate. Take hold of his life. Take hold of his life. That water being poured out on Sukkot is a picture of himself. If you're thirsty, he'll give you water from the river of life.